Welcome back to Oh Snapped.
Oh Snapped.
Oh Snapped. Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go. All right. Episode 5, y'all.
Hey, y'all.
All right. You know, let's do it.
Okay.
Okay. This one's Kimberly Rico.
Rico Suave.
Not so much.
No.
Mm-mm.
She married her college sweetheart.
Steve was a gentle giant.
Had a lovely daughter and a brand new home in the suburbs.
You know, husband, wife, child, dog, cat, everything everybody has.
I guess you can say they're all American.
But at the murder mystery weekend at a romantic resort, Kim's perfect life went up in smoke. A 7-year itch turns deadly in a fiery tale of ultimate betrayal. Next on Snapped.
Kim was loved by everyone. Kathy, I guess it's Kathy. It's spelled Cathay.
That's a typo. It's Kathy.
Oh. I was like, she spells it so weird. Okay, so obviously Tori can't type.
No.
Kathy Rosenberger, a friend of Kim's, said that she was bubbly, outgoing, and appreciative.
With her husband Steve and adorable daughter Anna, Kim fit perfectly into the middle-class suburb of Laurel, Maryland.
Robert Dean, the prosecutor, said that she wasn't just a soccer mom, she was a soccer coach.
Ooh.
We'll slap my booty and call me Judy. She's like not just a soccer mom.
No, she's like a soccer coach.
Wow, she's like actually doing something.
And it's amazing her being a woman and not being very smart.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like as if soccer moms don't have so much going on that it's, you know, insane.
Well, and she's got a full-time job too.
Right, yeah. Like, okay, great.
They made a big point though to be like, she wasn't just a soccer mom.
Yeah. Like, okay, thanks a lot.
Well, I swanny.
Uh-huh. Like, I'm sorry, I wipe everybody's butt. There's so many things we do. Okay. Kim and Steve met in college at Penn State in the 80s. Maureen O'Toole Miller, friend of Kimberly's, said that
Kim was just an awesome person inside and out. But she was a bit on the heavier side and didn't have a lot of boyfriends and was always struggling with, you know, finding a quality relationship. And that's why we introduced her to Steve. Because he was in the same situation. Both of them fell so madly in love.
Kim was hopeful on her wedding day that she and Steve could make it work. That's a weird thing to say on your wedding day, don't you think? I'm hopeful we'll make it work.
Well, I think she was just really not wanting to be one of the statistics of like, well, what is it now? I don't even know the percentage, but you know.
It's over half, isn't it?
Yeah, like 95% of marriages end in divorce.
Right.
So wow. She was just like, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to do it.
I would actually be really interested to know, surely there is a statistic of this, at least partially, how many marriages end in murder? Because statistically, your spouse is the most likely person that will murder you should you, God forbid, get murdered.
Sure. Yeah.
So I just wonder.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing to wonder.
It's a wonderment. It was very important for her to have a successful marriage. She didn't have a good upbringing and didn't have a good relationship with her father. Her mom and dad divorced when she was younger, and her mother remarried a man that had apparently abused her. So, obviously, that's going to leave some scars.
Totally.
Maureen said that Steve was a gentle giant. He cared so much about his friends and would do anything for them. Dr. Helen Smith said that women who have been abused often look for some stability because it can help them break the cycle of a chaotic childhood. However, once women who have been abused get in a stable relationship, it often becomes uncomfortable, boring, and smothering to them. That's interesting. It was like, I want to find a nice guy. Okay, this is too nice.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I can see how, I guess, you know, like, I can connect the dots, I guess. I just never thought of it that way. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Guy, reporter for the Baltimore Sun, said that Kim had lots of close girlfriends that she hung out with and would go bar hopping and on shopping trips together. Steve worked long hours as a greenskeeper on a golf course, and Kim worked as a surgical technician at a hospital in nearby Silver Springs. So Dr. Smith said that women typically go into the medical field because they're more, or we are more nurturing, and we get more accolades for the work we do there. So kind of pumps you up a little bit, but it also kind of lets you get out that need to nurture sort of thing.
Like caregiver type of thing.
Makes sense. For the first 7 years of their marriage, everything seemed to be rainbows and butterflies for Kim and Steve. Okay. Then, I mean, you know, like you hear of the 7-year itch.
Mm-hmm. And this was exactly a 7-year itch.
Yeah. I've heard it's more like a 4 to 5 year itch. Like it's getting to where it doesn't take quite as long. But yeah, that's funny that it's not funny, but
it's interesting.
It's interesting. It's exactly 7 years they start to have problems. Friends of Steve said that they seemed to be in love and happy. And then all of a sudden, Kim got itchy, according to the narrator.
How itchy?
Very itchy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her friend Maureen said that the problem was with Kim working at the hospital. She'd become close friends with a lot of the techs and surgeons and people with a high social life. Kim loved it. She wanted fancy cars. She wanted fancy houses. She wanted fancy everything. But Steve didn't really like the hospital crowd. He worked at the golf course, and he kind of thought that doctors were, like, snooty.
He obviously, I'm sure, was around a lot of them because doctors are notorious for golfing, I feel like. And I feel like Steve's mentality is friends in low places by Garth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't want them to sit up in their ivory towers.
Yeah.
Passing judgment.
Right. They're, like, highfalutin, and he's not.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just a good old boy.
Yeah, and he didn't have that, like Maureen said, he wasn't the kind of person to put on airs. He wanted to stay home with his family, and he just really hoped that Kim would be there, too. He was just totally a family man. That was the most important thing to him. And Kim just finally decided that she wanted out. She asked for a divorce, and Steve was obviously super upset about that.
Very often when you're married, you may go into the marriage having separate interests, which at first may be very exciting because you're marrying someone different from you and you see things in a different way. But after a while, those differences may become more annoying or more, wow, I'm really married to someone who doesn't see things the way I do or doesn't do things the way I do.
So Steve vowed to keep the marriage together, and they started to see a couples counselor. And by that winter, Steve felt like the marriage was going to turn around. He wanted to do something special, so he called his friend Mike and asked him for ideas on what to do for Kim.
And where I worked, they were doing a little getaway weekend for Valentine's Day with a murder mystery dinner, and he thought that would be a great idea. And so he ended up making reservations.
Well, and Mike was so adorable because he's like, I guess I was kind of the friend that was pretty good at like romantic stuff. So he asked me to help him.
That's really cute.
I know.
Like trying to do special stuff with your wife.
With your special lady.
Yeah. On February 14th, 1998, Kim and Steve drove to Harbor Town in St. Michael's, Maryland for a romantic weekend whodunit.
What no one knew was that as the staged murder mystery came to an end, a real one was about to begin.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh my gosh. Mike Miller said that Steve referred to it as a first date and he wanted to rekindle the relationship, and he felt like it was going well. That's really sad. Just like knowing what's coming, he's trying to work on the marriage. He
like genuinely trying to work on it.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, this is going to be just like a first date. Like, let's rediscover and rekindle. Like, that's really sweet to do. She played the role of Sherry Chardonnay. And
that honestly sounds like one of Dee Reynolds' characters. Yeah, Sherry Chardonnay.
It really does. That's so funny. And she said Kim got super into it. She was like very into the murder mystery, which is it foreshadowing? I don't know. John Greep, a reporter for the Easton Star Democrat, said that Kim was going around to other tables. She was listening to conversations that were taking place trying to figure out who the murderer was.
She follows me out into the hallway. And she asked me. So, are you the one who killed Bernardo?
And she was right. She totally nailed it. After the murder mystery was over, everyone went to their rooms for the night, including Kim and Steve, but that was the last time anyone would see Steve alive. I just like the nerve of her to do... I mean, it's like Valentine's Day, but it's like a murder mystery. Like, are you serious?
Right. And also, she was so... what's the word? Like, she... like, sneaky. I don't know the right word for it, but she's, you know... Steve is completely convinced that this is working. That
yeah, well, she's...
in a good place.
Yeah, she's obviously having a great time. Like, can you not step back from it for a second and look at that and be like, okay, look, my husband really did something special for me. And I don't know... all, I mean, this
you
is...
You can't know the inner workings of their... Yeah,
this is a short episode. They don't go into it all. But, like, he is definitely trying. And if you don't want to try, then just don't go.
Yeah, I mean, Steve was hanging in there like a hair in a biscuit.
He was.
He was.
Poor baby. Around midnight, Kim walked into the lobby of the hotel. So the banquet manager for the Harbor Town Resort, Elaine Phillips, said that Kim was not wearing a coat even though it was winter. And it's, yeah, it's February. It's like dead of winter.
In New England.
Yeah. Yuck. Very cold.
Oh my gosh.
And she said that she walked into the door, passed the front desk, and said calmly, "My room is on fire."
Who does that and calmly like that?
Yeah.
Hey, when you get a chance, my room is on fire.
Like, I don't want to bother you, but you might want to check this out, like, later after you finished everything up.
I just noticed.
Yeah. It's not a big deal. Yeah. I don't know where my husband is. He's in the room, I think. But, like, get to it whenever you get to it. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, no rush.
The hotel staff raced to the room, and when they got there, there was no smoke, no fire. But Elaine said that there was a smell in the air that was unique. That's not good.
No.
She said she didn't know if it was rubber or something melting. Oh, it's so horrible. When they went in, they found Steve lying face up on the floor next to empty beer cans and some cigars. Maryland State Trooper Clay Hartness said that his upper body, from basically his abdominal area up, his neck, his head, all of that, were very, very badly burned. He said that after Kim heard the news, she reacted naturally. She cried. She seemed very upset. She told the police that after the play, Steve had gotten sloppy drunk and they'd gotten into a fight. Clay said that Kim said that she left the room so that things wouldn't keep getting worse. Police believed Kim's story initially, and Maureen took her home. She said that Kim seemed cold and distant and just said, "I want to get out of here. I got to get home." She said that she didn't talk the whole way home. The next day, medical examiners began the autopsy, but they had no reason to suspect it was anything other than routine. Robert Dean said that the expectation was that it was a smoker's accident and that he had died during the course of careless smoking. Mike said he'd never smoked before, though, so it wasn't normal.
And I just wonder, because I know that now things are flame retardant. Like, I'm pretty sure the carpet, any rugs that you have, your bedding, all these things are made to make something like this pretty impossible,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
I wonder when that came into play, because 98 in my little 90s heart was 20 minutes ago. It's not that long ago, so I don't think that that would have, you know? It's not like we're talking about the 40s.
Yeah, but a lot of stuff went in the 90s, you know?
Even everything being flammable and doused in gasoline?
Well, yeah, but like, and also we could have like, ride around in the back of the truck, no problems.
True.
And, like, there weren't the car seat laws that there are now.
Okay, you're right.
You know, I mean, and, like,
I'm
parents
so...
smoked while they were pregnant, while you were newborn.
And in the car with you with the windows rolled up.
And in the house.
I am just so grateful, though, just for personal, selfish reasons, that we could... It was, like, a car seat and then nothing. Because I would probably still be in a booster seat in the car.
For sure. I can barely reach the pedals.
It's tough stuff, man.
Yeah, really is. Okay, so we know Steve doesn't normally smoke.
He's not known to be a heavy drinker either.
Right, and the autopsy had no alcohol in his blood. So Kim's like, he's absolutely sloppy drunk, and we got in a fight over that, and there's no alcohol. Like, did she think they weren't going to check that?
That dog ain't going to hunt.
Absolutely not. The medical examiner had also found that Steve was already dead when the fire was started. That's a big problem. That's a big problem.
She's like, he killed himself.
Yeah, I didn't do anything. Ooh. I was walking around without a coat on. No problems.
Right? I am going to try this one out here. It sounds like her cornbread wasn't done in the middle.
Mm-hmm. I like that because she definitely didn't think this one all the way through, did she? Mm-mm. While reporters descended on the resort, police went looking for clues. They found where the cigars had been purchased, and they also found out who had purchased them. Kim, not her husband.
Kim, riddle me that.
Yeah. Then a lot of Kim's friends came forward about, without being asked by police, to tell what Kim had told them. So Kathy said that they were like the Stepford wives. They all said the exact same thing. It was like just word for word, the same thing. Everybody said it. So definitely adds credibility to it. They told police that Kim's marriage was in trouble and she was looking for an out, and that she had all but basically revealed a plan to them.
She had all but revealed a plan to them that she would be able to cause the death of her husband, make it look like it was the result of a fire.
Does that sound familiar?
I cannot. Obviously, what Kim thought was that she was very good friends with these women, and they were going to be like, secret safe with me, girl.
Yeah.
I will never tell anybody what you just told me.
Yeah, they're ride or die and don't care that Steve has not been a bad husband to her. Because from the way that it sounded like, the way that everybody talked about it, was that people weren't like, yeah, he was really awful to her. We really were like, you've got to get out of this. It's dangerous, you know, whatever. Like, everybody seemed to really like Steve.
Yeah, I mean, not to put blame. No, I'm going to go ahead and put blame on Kim because she's to blame here. But it just sounds like in the relationship specifically, she got too big for her britches. Like, she was just over it, like outgrew it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, she thought she could have something better. Grass ain't always greener on the other side.
Well, and I feel like she was having her Reba is their life out there, but specifically with like rich doctors instead of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
She's saddled with her husband being blue collar worker status or something.
Yeah.
And wanting to be home every night and like play games with the children.
Yeah, that's so weird because like so many women are just like, I wish my husband spent time with us. I wish he wanted to be home with our kids. I wish he paid attention to me and the kids, like all this stuff. And it's like, he's just trying to
do right by you.
Yeah, and like build memories with his family, which is like all so many other women can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I don't like it. He doesn't have enough money. Whatever.
Exactly.
Police believed at that point that they had enough for a search warrant, and a judge agreed. When they showed up to serve the warrant, Kim tried to commit suicide. She took some pills and was taken to the hospital. Once she was stabilized, she was put in a psychiatric wing, and Kathy said they would play Scrabble and other games. And the narrator's like, while Kim played Scrabble, police were working on their own puzzle. Yeah, they were, girl. Yes, they were. So while Kim sat in a psychiatric hospital, a grand jury had a year to return an indictment. Is that how long it takes? Wow.
It's just funny to me because last night we watched Sister Act, because obviously.
Right.
And if you're not familiar with it, you have no business even talking to me, basically. Just kidding. But Whoopi, you know, she...
Whoopi.
She is... She witnesses a murder, and then her boyfriend puts a hit out on her because she knows too much, right? So then they have to like put her in the witness protection program and put her in the convent to be a nun, to hide her. And the cop is like, look, it's going to take about 2 months for us to bring this to trial. And she's like, 2 months? And she's mad. And I'm like, That is super expedited compared to real life.
Yeah.
Two months.
Yeah.
And he's like, but that's like the worst case scenario for them. He was like, a month, give me a month. Tops two.
Yeah.
Months.
Yeah, it's like 5 years.
Exactly. Really.
So at this point, time is almost up. They've got to return this indictment or not at this point. By like the end of spring, they hadn't indicted her yet. And according to Kathy, Kim was like, oh, I'm going home. Like, no problems here. If they were going to do it, they would have done it by now. And then they indicted her real quick at the very last minute. So,
I mean, she got cocky. She was like, nobody's going to catch me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I totally covered all my tracks and made it look like an accident. The trial began in January 1999, and if she was found guilty, Kim faced life in prison, and the arson charge carried an additional 30 years. I just can't believe her. The prosecution didn't hold back, though. They said that Kim had plenty of motive to kill her husband. For starters, they said Kim had an affair with a man almost a decade younger than her.
Ooh.
Yeah, that... She bought presents for him, she wrote him letters... Helen said that
you see more and more women today seeking out younger and younger men. He represented everything that her husband wasn't, exciting, young. That type of excitement was probably very important to her.
It kind of sounds like she just wanted to go back and do it over. You know what I mean? Like
sow her wild oats.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, to be honest, and I know that every, you know, like years and years and years ago, it was expected, I think everywhere in the world, or in the country anyway, for you to get married right out of high school, right out of college. I don't know about the 90s. Again, the 90s were yesterday for me. But nowadays, it's pretty common for you to just take your time, maybe get married closer to 30.
Mm-hmm.
The South is a little different, but it's, you know, it happens. So maybe it was just one of those things where she felt like her childhood or, you know, her early adulthood was wasted being married and not being able to, like, do whatever she wanted to do. Obviously, I mean, she's going out a ton and you can do whatever you want to do, girl. But like her lifestyle reflected that. She wanted to go out with her friends all the time, go bar hopping.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I get it. You want to go hang out with your friends some or whatever, but you've got a kid at home. You have a husband at home. Like,
yeah.
When do you plan on, you know, that's kind of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe show up for it a little bit.
Right, because, yeah, how does that make your kid feel? How does that, I mean, obviously she doesn't care how it made her husband feel, but how does that make your kid feel? Like, my 4-year-old Ben recently discovered that my husband and I are married. Like, he just didn't know. Like, he's like, but he brought up one of his friend's parents, and he's like, did you know that they're married? And I'm like, yeah, totally know that. And I'm like, you know, me and your dad are married. He's like, you are? I'm like, yeah. And so he's like, well, he said he didn't want to get married. And I said, why not? And he said, because then I'll have to move away and I want to live with you guys. And I was like, oh, well, you know, when you get older, you'll probably change your mind about that or whatever. And he's like, but mom, you're married? I'm like, yeah, I'm married to your dad. And he was having a hard time understanding that, like he kept saying, but is this your life? Is this where you live? You're not going to move away, are you? And aww. I'm like, no, baby, I live home. Like, yeah, this is where I live. Like, I think he was having a little trouble understanding, like, am I staying here or because I'm married, does that mean I have to move away? Like, you know, because he feels like if he gets married, he has to move away or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're not going to move away, though, are you? I'm like, no, honey, like, this is where I live. It's like, you know, they want that stability. They want that structure and have that family time. And it seems like Steve gave that to them. It's just really sad that it wasn't enough for her.
Well, yeah. And it almost sounds like Steve was doing his part and hers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As part of evidence, prosecution showed a Valentine's Day card that she had given the man right before she and Steve had left for Harbortown. She said she was looking forward to seeing him after the weekend was over. And the defense said that the relationship was just a fling and not worth killing over. The man was in the military, he was about to be shipped out, so there were no plans for anything serious. Even if that's true, the prosecution said that what that showed was that Kim had no intentions of reconciling with Steve. Because obviously...
Like, why carry this on? I mean, people make mistakes. It's possible. You can be like, look, I really messed up there. I'm going to be done with it. I'm really going to focus on what's important to me, which is my family, and that's y'all.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go on this trip. We're going to try to rekindle everything and just make everything the way that it used to be. That's not what she did, though.
No.
She's, like, writing love notes and, I don't know, Pepe Le Pew Valentine's Day cards.
Yeah.
To her little boy toy.
Yeah.
And being like, hey, see you when I get back from this stupid trip with my stupid husband.
Yeah, I guess I'll hang out with my husband all weekend, tell him I love him or whatever, but I'll really be thinking of you.
That's terrible. So hateful. What is that song? Is it Hinder? Lips of an Angel?
Yeah, I hate that song.
Sorry. It's appropriate.
My gosh, I remember when that song came out and so many girls were like, that's me and my boyfriend's song. I'm like, do you know what it's about?
Did you listen to it?
No, they didn't. And it's just like, they just assumed it was a sweet song. I'm like, and look, if Hinder was your song, just go back and revisit and read the lyrics, because I'm telling you,
it's not necessarily like a love song. Same with Uncle Cracker's Follow Me, and same with 3 Days Grace, I Hate Everything About You. I felt like that was obvious, but we've met people who that was their favorite or their couple song.
Oh, and what was that, Cold Stupid Girl?
Yes.
Come on. Yeah.
I'll tell you who was a stupid girl, Kim.
Yeah. Oh, she totally was. They said that Kim killed Steve because he was holding her back. Kim wanted more from life than chasing that every temporary high. Stacey Orico. I see what you did there. So she took out an insurance policy on Steve. Robert Dean said that within a year of his death, the insurance policy on him through his work was doubled. In the 90s was a wild time, because I don't think you had to tell anybody. You could just be like, here's the policy. Prosecutors said that she poisoned Steve and then lit the room on fire. And her defense was like, not so fast. Because the medical examiner hadn't been able to find a cause of death. Kathy said he eliminated some things and then just said probably poisoning because he didn't really know. But prosecutors were like, this is my favorite. Ever heard of a little thing called succinylcholine? If you've ever watched Forensic Files, you know about succinylcholine.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing ever because... if you're new to the true crime scene, that's totally fine. I'm like, okay, so stupid. Of course I know what succinylcholine is.
Yeah, because like it's widely used in Forensic Files.
It's like when they talk about, they're like, and what cell phone tower pinging means. I'm like,
yeah.
Get out of here.
Come at me like I haven't solved a million cases already.
Totally.
Yeah. If you don't know, though, which is totally fine.
That's totally fine.
Succinylcholine was commonly used in the operating room as a fast acting paralyzing agent, but it's virtually undetectable.
Now, do we know anybody in this case that would have access to something that would be used in an operating room?
Well, only if they were like a surgical technician.
Excuse me, Kim.
Oh my God. The deputy state fire marshal said that they were able to say positively that the fire was not started by cigars or careless smoking. You really have to, when you start a fire, I think so many people just totally underestimate how much you can tell about how it was started, when it was started.
Well, I think because they are thinking in terms of like Jack the Ripper times.
Right, yeah. They're like, well, there's a fire. Must have been an accident.
Right? In that Lifetime original movie, they couldn't figure out who it was. In that sci-fi movie for the Sci-Fi Channel, you couldn't tell anything from... It's like they're going through movies and things like that. And
oh,
it's like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, which one? I don't know what you're talking about.
I forgot I was thinking that I was talking to somebody who was smart. Well, that's my problem.
That's your problem. That's right. It's on you. It's
first
not
thing I did wrong.
Yeah, because you can tell so much, like... There's fire investigators. They can tell things about how things were started, how long it burned. Like, they can tell by how hot it burned. Totally. Was there an accelerant? Yeah, like, come on.
And that's the thing. Like, what Kim did was she was like, okay, I'm going to murder him by poisoning, light everything on fire, and then I'll just put some empty beer cans and things like this around, and nobody will know the difference. And...
I guess maybe she was assuming that his entire body would have been destroyed.
Well, I mean,
I don't know. She didn't use any accelerant.
And the fire was out before the people even got there.
Right, yeah. And, like, if somebody's going to die in a fire, typically they're going to have smoke inhalation.
Yeah.
But if you're already dead, you're not going to have any evidence of that because you're not breathing anymore. Like,
yeah,
that's a red flag.
Yeah.
The case boiled.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. No, I did. Did you know, ma'am? Yeah, actually, I didn't know that. The case boiled down to the argument that Kim used an undetectable poison to kill her husband and started a fire with an undetectable accelerant. That's hard to prove. I feel like that would be a little bit harder to get a guilty verdict, or it should. Because you're saying we don't have... Okay, because here's the thing. She could have injected him with succinylcholine. But do we know that she did?
No.
We don't. Do we know that she got any from the hospital?
No.
Do we know that anybody saw her with any?
No.
We didn't find it in his system.
And there's no, like, point of entry, like a needle mark or anything like that, that would have been injected.
Right.
No, there's no evidence of it.
There's no evidence.
There's also no evidence that she started the fire.
Right. It would make sense because she was the last person to be in there with him, and he was already dead before the fire started. Like, obviously he couldn't start the fire, and we know that it didn't start because of the cigars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, the succinylcholine thing, I don't know, that's hard because it's like, well, there is a substance that she could have access to because it's common in operating rooms.
But just because she could have had access doesn't mean that she did.
Right. Yeah. Now, if they followed that up with, and there was a bottle missing from her work, like Janine Jones, you know, once they finally started looking at the stuff there, they realized that she had removed a lot of it and then replaced it with water or whatever.
Right.
But that's not the case here.
Mm-mm.
So that's a tough case you got there.
Yeah.
But they did have all of her friends being like, she said she was going to kill him and make it look like a fire.
Yeah, I was going to say, they definitely talked about it specifically being accidental by fire type of thing.
I wish that any one of those people would have maybe told Steve or called the police, you know, like, if that many people, if she told that many people, and she didn't just say, like, it wasn't just like, Steve didn't take the trash out, I could just wring his neck, you know? It was not like that. It's like, here, I'm working on a plan. And she even told her friend Rachel, who testified to this, that she said that she was going to inject him with succinylcholine and then put candles in the room and leave and let him die.
That's like a legit concrete plan.
Yeah, and that's serious. That's not like...
That's threatening.
Yeah, sometimes I could just kill him. That's not that. So, like, why is nobody saying anything? He would still be alive today. Anna would still have a father.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand, because those are very, very deliberate words and plans,
mm-hmm.
It seems like to me. Eventually, the narrator said that the trial broke out into an all-out catfight, albeit a subtle one. Maureen said that while her friends were testifying, she would sit at her table and flip them the bird that Kim would.
It's not funny, but it is funny.
It's like, a jury can see you. As a defense attorney, I would be very mad at her.
I know. I'd be like, you better lock it up. You better lock it up.
Yeah, lock it up. Like, what are you doing?
How immature, too.
She's yes. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, like, come on. Which I think just kind of, it helps prove the prosecution's point in the sense that, like, she's an idiot.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The Kim's friends are like, hey, she actually said that she was going to kill her husband this way. And Kim's like, Lou, just say what?
Exactly. Yeah. The judge even had to tell her that she was going to be removed from the courtroom if she didn't stop. So, I mean, it was very noticeable.
How embarrassing for her.
Yeah, this was not her, like, subtly holding the bird under the table. This was, like, big fat out there.
Like, scratching your nose while
you're... Yeah. Yeah. Closing arguments were made on January 14th, 1999, and 4 hours after deliberation, the jury had the verdict.
Super quick.
Super quick. For arson, guilty. First-degree murder, guilty. Kim Ricco was sentenced to life in prison plus 30 years for the arson charge. Helen Smith said that probably what did her in was the fact that she went around to all of her friends and told them what she was going to do. And you know what? Helen, I agree, because that probably did do her in.
Yeah, I think that that's incredibly true.
And it certainly maybe, does not help.
Maybe didn't even need to be said again, but I'm glad we did.
Mm-hmm. Loose lips sink ships.
Ooh.
Kim Ricco works in the jailhouse kitchen where she orders food for 800 prisoners. She's appealing her conviction, of course. Kim and Steve's daughter, Anna, lives with her grandmother, and she visits her mother frequently. Guests at the Harbor Town Resort often request the room in which Steve Ricco died that night. What?
That's insensitive. I mean, it's one thing, because you know, like, you hear about, like, and this is not the same thing, I know that, haunted houses, and you're like, ooh, request the room on floor 13, you know, that's not what this is. This is a murder scene.
That's horrible. If she did poison him or inject him with succinylcholine, then, but how did he die? So, I guess it was just a lethal dose of it, because otherwise, I have heard of cases, I mean, this is horrible, but I have heard of cases where people are given some kind of an injection, which does paralyze them, and then they are, like, the house is set on fire. So they're alive. They're awake. They just can't move or can't speak. That's terrifying.
It's awful. It's awful to do to somebody that you're supposed to love. Like, I just don't understand.
Mm-hmm. And even if you don't love him anymore, like, do you hate him that much that you don't care? His life means nothing to you?
I mean, it seems like it.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
I don't get it. And I don't like it.
Mm-mm. So I'm happy with her sentence.
I am too. I tried to look up more recent information. As far as I can tell, she's still in prison, but there's not really a ton out there about her.
Yeah. So. I mean, that was just deliberate, as deliberate can get. Like.
Oh, yeah.
Hateful, hateful, hateful.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and their poor daughter.
I know it. But she's just being ugly.
She's being ugly. She needs to quit being ugly. So, but she's not going to quit being ugly.
No, she will not.
She's just an ugly person.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, I mean.
Well, ugly through and through. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there you have it. Let us know what you think. And, you know, we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.